Chapter 25. Pitt knocked on the door of the address given him by Peter Harper. After a short wait, it was opened by Julia Lee. She stood radiant in a white silk cashmere dress that came slightly below the knees with open shoulders and back to the curve above her hips and was held up by a thin strap around the neck. Her black hair was swept back in a wrapped ponytail high on the head with spiky ends. Her only jewelry was a thin gold chain around her waist and a gold cuff necklace. Her legs were nude, her feet showing in open gold shoes. Her eyes widened and she murmured, "Dirk, Dirk Pitt." "Oh, I hope so," he replied with a devilish grin. After her initial shock at seeing Pitt standing there, resplendent in a tuxedo with vest and gold watch chain, she recovered and threw herself against him, her arms encircling his neck. He was so surprised he barely caught himself from tumbling over backward down the steps. Impetuously, she kissed him hard on the mouth. Now it was Pitt's turn for his eyes to widen. He had never expected such a spontaneous reception. "I thought I was the one who said I'd kiss you full on the mouth when next we meet." Reluctantly, he gripped Julia by the upper arms and gently eased her away. "Do you greet all your blind dates in that manner?" Suddenly she cast her dove-gray eyes to the ground shyly. "I don't know what came over me. Seeing you came as a shock. I wasn't told who was escorting me to Chin Shang's party. Peter Harper only said he arranged for a tall, dark, handsome man to act as my backup." "The dirty sneak led me to believe that you were my backup. He should have been a theatrical producer. I'll bet he's drooling in anticipation of Chin Chang's reaction when the two people who queered his operation at Orion Lake walk in uninvited to his party." "I hope you're not disappointed at having to escort me. Under all this makeup, I still look pretty awful." He gently lifted her chin until he could look down into her misty eyes. He might have said something witty and clever, but it wasn't the moment. "About as disappointed as a man who has discovered a diamond mine." "I didn't know you could say nice things to a girl." "You wouldn't believe the hordes of women my silver tongue has seduced." "Liar," she said softly, as her lips broke into a smile. "Enough of this endearing talk," he said, releasing her. "We'd better get a move on before the food runs out." After Julia briefly returned inside the house to find her purse and coat, Pitt led her to the stately and majestic machine parked at the curb in front of the townhouse where she was staying with an old sorority sister from college. She stared in open astonishment at the mammoth car with its big chrome wire wheels and wide white wall tires.
"Good Lord," she exclaimed. "What kind of a car are we going in?"
"A 1929 Duesenberg," answered Pitt. "Since we've been ordered to crash a party thrown by one of the world's richest men, I thought it only fitting and proper that we arrive in style."
"I've never ridden in a car this grand," said Julia admiringly, as she slid onto the soft, tan leather seat.
She marveled at the hood that seemed to stretch halfway down the block, as Pitt closed the door and came around behind the big steering wheel.
"I've never heard of a Duesenberg."
"The Model J Duesenbergs were the finest examples of American automaking," Pitt explained. "Manufactured from 1928 until 1936, they were considered by many automobile connoisseurs as the handsomest cars ever built. Only about 480 chassis and engines came out of the factory, and were sent to the most esteemed coachmakers in the country who produced magnificent designs. This car was custom-bodied by the Walter M. Murphy Company in Pasadena, California, and styled as a convertible sedan. Not cheap, they sold as high as $20,000 when the Ford Model A sold for around $400. They were owned by the wealthy celebrities of their day, particularly the Hollywood crowd, who bought Duesenbergs as a show of pride and prestige. If you drove a doozy, you had made it big time."
"She's beautiful," said Julia, admiring the artistically flowing lines. "She must be fast." The engine was an outgrowth of the Duesenberg racing engines. A straight 8-cylinder engine displacing 420 cubic inches, it produced 265 horsepower when most engines at the time put out less than 70. Although this engine doesn't have the supercharger that was installed on later models, I made a few modifications when I restored the car. Under the right conditions, she could touch 140 miles an hour.
I'll take your word for it without a demonstration.
A pity we can't drive with the top down, but it's a cool night and I put it up to protect my lady's hair.
A woman loves a considerate man.
I always aim to please. She looked at the flat windshield and noticed a small hole in one corner of the glass with tiny cracks spreading from it.
Is that a bullet hole?
A souvenir from a couple of Chin Chang's flunkies.
He sent men to kill you?
Asked Julia, staring in fascination at the hole.
Where did this take place?
They dropped by the aircraft hangar where I live earlier in the evening, Pitt answered impassively.
What happened?
They weren't the least bit sociable, so I sent them on their way. Pitt hit the starter, and the big engine turned over with a soft purr before the 8 cylinders fired and broadcast a mellow roar through the big exhaust pipe. The low gears gave out a muted whir as Pitt shifted through the sequence from first to third. The great luxury car that has never been surpassed rolled through the streets of Washington, regal and majestic. Julia decided it was hopeless to pry any more information out of Pitt. She relaxed in the wide leather seat and enjoyed the ride and the stares of other drivers and the people walking on the sidewalks. Shortly after traveling up Wisconsin Avenue, out of the District of Columbia, Pitt turned onto a meandering residential street, canopied by huge trees sprouting new spring leaves, until he reached the gate of the drive leading to Chin Chang's Chevy Chase mansion. The iron gates were a monstrosity of Chinese dragons entwined around the bars. Two Chinese guards, dressed in elaborate uniforms, stared strangely at the huge car for several moments before stepping forward and asking to see invitations. Pitt passed them through the open window and waited while the guards checked his and Julia's names against those on a guest list. Satisfied that Pitt and Julia were indeed invited, they bowed and pressed the code on a remote transmitter that opened the gates. Pitt threw them a brief wave and tooled the Duesenberg up the long driveway and stopped under the portico at the entrance to the house, whose exterior was lit up like a football stadium.
"I must remember to compliment Harper," said Pitt. "He not only provided us with invitations, but he somehow managed to sneak our names onto the guest list."
Julia's expression was that of a young girl approaching the Taj Mahal.
"I've never attended a Major League Washington party before. I hope I won't embarrass you."
"You won't," Pitt assured her. "Just tell yourself that it's strictly a social theater. The powerful Washington elite throw posh functions because they have something to sell. It all comes down to people milling around, swilling booze, looking influential, and exchanging gossip mixed with explicit information. Mostly, the city's society chronicles the foolish events from their petty little political worlds."
"You act as if you've been to them before."
"As I told you on the dock at Grapevine Bay, my father is a senator. In my bon vivant younger days, I used to tag along and attempt to pick up congressional mistresses."
"Were you successful?"
"Almost never."
A stretch limo was disgorging several of Chin Chang's guests, who turned and gazed in frank admiration at the Duesenberg. Valet parking attendants appeared as if summoned. The valets were immune to limousines and expensive cars, most of them foreign, but this one staggered their minds. Almost reverently, they opened the doors. Pitt eyed a man standing off to the side who took a particular interest in the newcomers and their means of transportation. Then he turned and hurried inside. No doubt, Pitt thought, to alert his boss to the arrival of guests who didn't fit the normal pattern. As they swept arm in arm through the elegant colonnade entrance, Julia whispered to Pitt, "I hope I don't lose it when I meet that murdering bastard and spit in his face. Just tell him how much you enjoyed the cruise on his ship and how you're looking forward to the next one." The gray eyes flashed with fire. "Like hell I will." "Now don't forget," said Pitt, "as an agent in good standing with the INS, you're here on assignment." "And you?" Pitt laughed. "I'm just along for the ride." "How can you be so lackadaisical?" she snapped. "We may be lucky to get out of here with our heads." "We'll be all right so long as we're in a crowd. Our problems come after we leave." "Not to worry," she assured him. "Peter has arranged for a team of security people to stand by outside the house in case of trouble."
"Should Chin Chang get nasty, do we send up flares?"
"We'll be in constant communication. I have a radio in my purse."
Pitt stared at the tiny purse skeptically. "And a gun, too?" She shook her head.
"No gun."
Then she smiled slyly.
"You forget. I've seen you in action.
I'm counting on you to protect me."
"Dear heart, you're in big trouble."
They passed through the foyer into a vast hallway filled with Chinese art objects. The centerpiece was a 7-foot-tall bronze incense burner inlaid with gold. The upper section depicted flames leaping toward the sky, interspersed with women, their arms and hands uplifted with offerings. Aromatic incense wreathed the flames in billowy clouds that scented the entire house. Pitt stepped up to the bronze masterwork and studied it closely, examining the inlaid gold that decorated the base.
"Beautiful, isn't it?" said Julia.
"Yes," Pitt said quietly. "The craftsmanship is quite unique."
"My father has a much smaller version that isn't nearly so ancient."
"The smell is a bit overwhelming."
"Not to me. I grew up surrounded by Chinese culture."
Pitt took Julia by the arm and led her into an immense room filled with Washington's rich and mighty. The scene reminded him of a Roman banquet out of a Cecil B. DeMille movie. Slim women in designer dresses, congressmen, senators, and the aristocracy of the city's attorneys, lobbyists, and power brokers, all trying to look sophisticated and distinguished in their formal evening wear. There was such an ocean of fabrics between the guests and the furniture that the room was unnaturally silent, despite 100 voices talking at once. If the furnishings had cost less than $20 million, then Chin Chang had bought them at a discount house in New Jersey. The walls and ceiling were intricately carved and paneled in redwood, as was most of the furniture. The carpet alone must have taken 20 young girls half their adolescent lives to weave. It flowed in blue and gold like an ocean at sunset, and the depth of its pile made it seem as if one had to wade through it. The curtains alone would have put those in Buckingham Palace to shame. Julia had never seen so much silk in one space. The opulent upholstered chairs and settees looked like they might have been more at home in a museum. No less than 20 stewards stood behind a buffet line whose mountains of lobster, crab, and other seafood must have cleaned out the entire catch of a fishing fleet. Only the finest French champagne was served alongside vintage wines, none of which had labels from later than 1950. In one corner of the ornate room, a string orchestra played themes from motion pictures. Though Julia had come from a wealthy family in San Francisco, she had seen nothing to compare with this affair. She stood in solemn awe as her eyes scanned the room. Finally, she recovered enough to say,
"I can see what Peter meant when he said Chin Chang's invitation was the most desired in Washington aside from the White House.
Frankly, I prefer the ambiance at the French embassy parties. More elegant, more refined."
"I feel so plain among all these beautifully dressed women."
Pitt gave Julia an adoring look and squeezed her around the waist.
"Stop belittling yourself.
You're a class act. You'd have to be blind not to notice that every man in the room is devouring you. Julia blushed at the flattery. It embarrassed her to see that he was right. The men were staring at her openly, as were many of the women. She also observed a dozen exquisite Chinese women dressed in silk sheath dresses mingling with the male guests.
It seems I'm not the only woman with Chinese ancestry.
Pitt made a passing, offhand glance at the women Julia referred to.
Daughters of Joy.
I beg your pardon?
Hookers.
What are you suggesting?
Chin Chang hires them to work the men who came along without their wives. You might call it a subtle form of political patronage. What influence he can't buy, he slips through the back door with sexual favors.
Julia looked bewildered. I have a lot to learn about government lobbying.
They are exotic, aren't they? A good thing I'm with someone who puts them to shame, or they might prove a temptation I couldn't resist.
You've got nothing Chin Chang wants, Julia said testily. Perhaps we should find him and make our presence known.
Pitt gazed at her, as if shocked. What, and miss out on all the free food and drink? Not on your life. First things first. Let's head to the bar for champagne, and then indulge ourselves at the buffet. Later, we'll enjoy a cognac before making ourselves known to the arch-villain of the Orient.
Julia said to him, I think you're the craziest, most complex and reckless man I've ever met.
You left out charming and cuddly.
I can't imagine any woman putting up with you for more than 24 hours.
To know me is to love me. The mirth lines around his eyes crinkled, and he gave a tilt of his head toward the bar. All this talk makes me thirsty. They strolled across the crowded floor to the bar and casually sipped the offered champagne. Then they wandered to the buffet table and filled their plates. Pitt was profoundly surprised to find a large platter of fried abalone, a shellfish that was on the verge of extinction. He spotted an empty table by the fireplace and commandeered it. Julia could not keep her eyes from exploring the throng in the immense room.
I see several Chinese men, but I can't tell which one is Chin Chang. Peter failed to give me a description of him.
Or an investigative agent, said Pitt between bites of lobster. Your powers of observation are sadly lacking.
You know his appearance.
Never laid eyes on him. But if you look through the doorway on the west wall, guarded by a giant dressed in a dynastic costume, you'll find Chin Chang's private audience room. My guess is he sits in there and holds court. Julia began to rise to her feet.
Let's get this over with.
Pitt held out a hand and restrained her. Not so fast. I haven't had my after-dinner cognac yet.
You're impossible.
Women are always telling me that. A steward took their plates, and Pitt left Julia momentarily for the bar, returning in a few minutes with 2 crystal snifters containing a 50-year-old cognac. Slowly, very slowly, as if he hadn't a care in the world, he savored the smooth flavor. As he held the snifter to his lips, he saw a man, reflected in the crystal, approach their table.
"Good evening," he said in a soft voice. I hope you're enjoying yourselves. I am your host.
Julia froze as she looked up into the smiling face of Chin Chang. He looked nothing like what she imagined. She did not envision him as tall and stout. The face was not that of a cruel, cold-blooded murderer with vast power. There was no hint of authority behind the friendly tone, and yet she could sense an underlying coldness. He stood immaculate in a beautifully cut tuxedo embroidered with golden tigers.
"Yes, thank you," said Julia, barely able to remain polite. "It truly is a magnificent affair."
Pitt rose to his feet slowly in a conscious effort not to appear patronizing.
"May I present Miss Julia Lee?"
"And you, sir?" asked Chin Chang. "My name is Dirk Pitt." There it was. No skyrockets, no drum roll. The guy has style. Pitt had to give him that. The smile remained fixed. If there was surprise at finding Pitt alive and breathing, Chin Chang didn't show it. The only detectable response was a slight shift of the eyes. For long moments, jade green eyes locked with opaline green, neither man willing to break off. Pitt knew damned well it was stupid and saw no purpose in the stare-down other than egotistical satisfaction by the winner. Gradually, his gaze lifted to Chin Chang's eyebrows, then forehead, lingered and moved to the hair. Then Pitt's eyes widened a fraction, as if he had found something, and his lips broke into a slight grin. The ruse worked. Chin Chang's concentration was broken. He involuntarily raised his eyeballs to look upward. "May I ask what you find so amusing, Mr. Pitt?" "I was just wondering who your hairstylist was," Pitt answered innocently. "She is a Chinese lady who attends me once a day. I'd give you her name, but she is in my private employ." "I envy you. My barber is a mad Hungarian with palsy." There came a brief, icy stare. "The photo of you in your dossier does not do you justice." "I applaud a man who does his homework." "May I have a word with you in private, Mr. Pitt?" Pitt nodded toward Julia. "Only if Miss Lee is present." "I'm afraid our conversation may not be of interest to the lovely lady." Pitt realized that Chin Chang did not know Julia's credentials. "On the contrary, rude of me not to mention that Miss Lee is an agent with the Immigration and Naturalization Service. She was also a passenger on one of your cattle boats, and had the misfortune of enjoying your hospitality at Orion Lake. You are familiar, I trust, with Orion Lake. It's in the state of Washington." For an instant, there was a red glare in the jade eyes, and then it was just as quickly extinguished. Chin Chang remained as impenetrable as marble. His voice came even and calm. "If you both will please follow me." He turned and strode away, knowing unquestionably Pitt and Julia would trail in his wake. "I think the time has come," said Pitt, as he helped Julia from her chair. "You crafty dog," she murmured. "You knew all along he would seek us out." Chang didn't get where he's at without a healthy dose of curiosity. Obediently, they followed Chin Chang through the milling congregation until he came to the costumed giant who opened the door for him. They entered a room unlike the heavily furnished and decorated one they just left. This room was modest and austere. The walls were merely painted in a soft blue. The only furnishings were a settee, two chairs, and a desk whose surface was barren except for a telephone. He motioned for them to sit on the settee as he took his place behind the desk. Pitt was amused to see that the desk and chair were slightly elevated so that Chin Chang looked down at his visitors. "Forgive me for mentioning it," Pitt said offhandedly, "but the bronze incense burner in the main entry, from the Liao dynasty, I believe."
"Why, yes, you are quite correct."
"I assume you know that it's a fake."
"You are most observant, Mr. Pitt," said Chin Chang without taking offense. "The piece is not fake, but a well-executed replica. The original was lost in 1948, during the war when the People's Army of Mao Zedong crushed the forces of Chiang Kai-shek."
"The burner is still in China?"
"No, it was on a ship with many other ancient treasures stolen from my country by Chiang that were lost at sea."
"The ship's final resting place is a mystery?"
"A mystery I have worked many years to solve. To find the ship and its cargo is my life's most passionate desire."
"It's been my experience that shipwrecks are never found until they want to be found."
"Very poetic," Chin Chang said, pausing to glance at his watch. I must return and tend to my guests, so I'll be brief before I have my security people escort you to the door. Please tell me the purpose behind your uninvited presence.
I thought the purpose was transparent, Pitt replied conversationally. Miss Lee and I wanted to meet the man we're going to hang.
You're very succinct, Mr. Pitt. I appreciate that in an adversary. But it is you who will be a casualty in the war.
What war is that?
The economic war between the People's Republic of China and the United States. A war for extraordinary power and wealth for the winner.
I have no ambitions on that score.
Ah, but I do. That's the difference between us and between our countrymen. Like most of the rabble in America, you lack determination and zeal.
Pitt shrugged his shoulders. If greed is your god, then you possess very little of true value.
You think of me as a greed monger? Chin Chang asked pleasantly.
I've seen little of your lifestyle that persuades me otherwise.
All the great men of history were driven by ambition. It goes hand in hand with power. Contrary to public opinion, the world is not divided by good and evil, but between those who do and those who do not. The visionaries and the blind, the realists and the romanticists. The world does not turn on good deeds and sentiment, Mr. Pitt, but on achievement.
What do you ultimately hope to gain in the end, besides a pretentious edifice over your coffin?
You misunderstand me. My goal is to help China become the greatest nation the world has ever known.
While you become even more filthy rich than you already are. Where does it end, Mr. Shang?
There is no end, Mr. Pitt.
You'll have a tough fight on your hands if you think China can surpass the United States.
Ah, but the deed is done, Chin Chang said matter-of-factly. Your country has died a slow death as a world power, while my country is in its ascendancy. Already we have passed the United States to become the largest economy in history. Already we have passed your trade deficit with Japan. Your government is impotent despite its nuclear arsenal. Soon it will be unthinkable for your leaders to intervene when we assume control of Taiwan and the rest of the Asian nations.
So what does it really matter? Asked Pitt. You'll still be playing catch-up to our standard of living for the next 100 years.
Time is on our side. Not only will we erode America from the outside, but with the help of your own countrymen, we will eventually cause it to crumble from within. If nothing else, future division and internal race wars will seal your fate as a great nation.
Pitt began to see Chin Chang's direction. Aided and abetted by your doctrine of illegal immigration, is that it? Chin Chang looked at Julia.
Your Immigration and Naturalization Service estimates that nearly 1 million Chinese enter America and Canada legally and illegally each year. Actually, the figure is closer to 2 million. While you concentrated on keeping out your neighbors to the south, we have been flooding masses of my countrymen across the sea and across your shoreline. One day, sooner than you think, your coastal states and the Canadian provinces will be an extension of China.
To Pitt, the concept was inconceivable. I'll grade you with an A for wishful thinking and an F for practicality.
Not as ridiculous as you may think, Chin Chang said patiently. Consider how the boundaries of Europe have changed in the past 100 years. Migration through the centuries has shattered old empires and built new, only to have them fall again from new waves of migrants.
An interesting theory, said Pitt, but a theory nonetheless. The only way for your scenario to become reality is for the American people to lie down and play dead.
Your countrymen have slept through the 1990s,
Chin Chang replied, a visceral, even menacing quality in his voice. When they finally wake up, it will be a decade too late. You paint a grim picture for humanity, said Julia, visibly shaken. Pitt went silent. He did not have the answer, nor was he Nostradamus. His brain told him that Chin Chang's prophecy might indeed come to pass. But his heart refused to reject hope. He came to his feet and nodded at Julia. I think we've heard enough of Mr. Shang's meaningless drivel. It's plain to see that he's a man who loves to hear himself talk. Let's clear out of this architectural monstrosity and its phony decor and breathe fresh air again. Chin Chang leaped to his feet. You dare mock me, he snarled. Pitt moved to the desk and leaned across the surface until his face was bare inches away from Chin Chang's. Mock you, Mr. Shang? That's putting it mildly. I'd rather have my Christmas stocking filled with cow dung than listen to your retarded philosophy on future affairs. Then he took Julia's hand. Come on, we're out of here. Julia made no effort to move. She appeared dazed. Pitt had to pull her along behind him. At the doorway, he paused and looked back. Thank you, Mr. Shang, for a most provocative evening. I enjoyed your excellent champagne and seafood, especially the abalone. The Chinese face was tight and cold, twisted in a mask of malevolence. No man speaks to Chin Chang in this manner. I'm sorry for you, Shang. On the surface, you are fabulously rich and almighty, but underneath, you're only a self-made man who worships his inventor. Chin Chang fought to regain control of his emotions. When he spoke, his voice came as though out of an arctic mist. You have made a fatal error, Mr. Pitt. Pitt smiled thinly. I was about to say the same about the two cretins you sent to kill me earlier this evening. Another time, another place, you may not be so fortunate. Pitt said coldly, just so we keep a level playing field. Please be advised that I have hired a team of professional assassins to terminate you, Mr. Shang. With luck, we'll never meet again. Before Chin Chang could respond, Pitt and Julia were walking through the mass of guests toward the front entrance. Julia discreetly opened her purse, held it close to her face as though searching for cosmetics, and spoke into a tiny radio. This is Dragon Lady. We are coming out. Dragon Lady, said Pitt. Is that the best you could dream up for a code name? The dove gray eyes gazed at him as if he was thick between the ears. It fits, she said simply. If Chin Chang's paid killers had any plans of following the Duesenberg and blasting its occupants at the first stoplight, they were quickly laid to rest as two unmarked vans fell into a convoy behind the big car. I hope they're on our side, said Pitt. Peter Harper is very thorough. The INS protects its own with specialists outside the service. The people in the vans are from a little-known security force that supplies teams of bodyguards on request from different branches of government. A great pity. She looked at him quizzically. Why do you say that? With all these armed chaperones watching our every move, I can't very well take you to my place for a nightcap. Are you sure a nightcap is all you had in mind? Julia replied in a sultry voice. Pitt took one hand off the wheel and patted her bare knee. Women have always been an enigma to me. I had hoped you might forget you were an agent of the government and throw caution to the winds. She moved across the leather bench seat until her body was pressed against his and slid her hands around his arm. She found the muffled roar of the engine and the smell of the leather sensual. I went off duty the minute we walked out of that scumbag's house, she said lovingly. My time is your time. How do we get rid of your friends? We don't. They're with us for the duration. In that case, do you think they'd mind if I took a detour? Probably, she said, smiling. But I'm sure you'll do it anyway.
Pitt went silent as he shifted gears and drove the Duesenberg effortlessly through traffic, watching in the rearview mirror with a touch of pride at seeing the vans struggle to keep pace. I hope they don't shoot out my tires. They don't come cheap for a car like this. Did you mean what you said when you told Chin Chang you'd hired a team of hitmen to kill him? Pitt grinned wolfishly. A big, fat bluff, but he doesn't know that. I take great satisfaction in tormenting men like Chin Chang, who are too used to having people jump at their beck and call. Do him good to stare at the ceiling nights and wonder if someone is lurking outside waiting to put a bullet in him. So what's with the detour? I think I found the chink in Chin Chang's armor, his Achilles heel, if you'll pardon the cliché. Despite the seemingly impenetrable wall he's formed around his personal life, he has a vulnerable crack that can be pried open a mile wide. Julia pulled her coat tightly around her bare legs to ward off the late evening chill.
You must have divined something from what he said that escaped me.
As I recall, his words were, "My life's most passionate desire." She looked curiously into his eyes, which never left the road.
He was talking about a vast cargo of Chinese art treasures that vanished on a ship.
The same.
He possesses more wealth and Chinese antiques than anyone else in the world. Why should a ship with a few historical objects be of serious interest to him?
Not a mere interest, gorgeous creature. Chin Chang is obsessed like all men down through the centuries who have searched for lost treasure. He won't die a happy man, no matter how much wealth and power he's accumulated, until he can replace every one of his art replicas with the genuine pieces. To own something no other man or woman on earth can own is the ultimate fulfillment to Chin Chang. I've known men like him. He'd trade 30 years of his life to find the shipwreck and its treasures.
But how does one go about searching for a ship that vanished 50 years ago? Julia asked. Where do you begin to look?
You start, Pitt said casually, by knocking on a door about 6 blocks up the street.